You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.
Hey, good morning, Makers Church. It is so good to be with you today. If you're new with us, welcome. We're so glad that you're here. My name is Derek. I serve here as our lead pastor, and you are a gift to us, your presence being with us this morning. I love that song, Free at Last. Free at Last. I know that all of us can show up in spaces like this from time to time, really looking for freedom in some areas of our life, looking for change, transformation in our lives. And, you know, the good news that we proclaim a lot around here is that Jesus is the source of that kind of transformation and that change in our lives. And I want to spend this morning talking about that a bit. If you've been journeying with us for the last several weeks, you've heard me talk a little bit about some personal stuff that I've been going through with my father, my extended family, my siblings, and it's been a real difficult and interesting kind of few months. My father ended up passing on Tuesday, and if you've been around for a while, you know a little bit of my story. But I didn't grow up really knowing my dad. My dad wasn't really around in my life much, and my immediate family, my sisters, my brothers, my sister and my two brothers, just out of proximity, just really haven't been close, really, growing up as adults. And so I would say disconnected is really kind of the best term that you would apply to my family. And so, of course, with my dad getting very sick and then passing, that's brought us together in some kinds of ways, and that's been a very interesting few weeks and months, and there's some really beautiful parts and some really hard parts, but over the last several months, I had a chance to go back and visit my dad before he passed, and I had a chance to take two of my three kids, sorry, Aubrey, and I took my son Blake and my daughter Kira out on two separate trips, and my dad had never met my children. They had never met him other than, you know, an occasional FaceTime here and there, and it's very interesting. My son really asked the question this week after we had told him that my father had passed, his grandpa had passed. My son got to see firsthand kind of the dynamics of my family, which he didn't grow up with. He knows my wife's family very well. They're all sitting over here, aunties and uncles, and knows grandma and grandpa really well. But my family has just been kind of like this mystery, you know, really to my kids. And my family is interesting, and I hope they're watching online right now. I doubt they are, but, you know, it's different. You know, my family that I grew up in is very different than my family, Laurel and my household. And so Blake asked the question this week, because he saw firsthand, he saw a kind of just different way of living, different way of being, different way of thinking, and he was like, Dad, how are you so different than your brothers and your sister and your dad? And just, and he asked such a profound question. He's like, why is our life so different than your life growing up? And, you know, I'd love to have an easy answer to that, but my easiest answer I can give, and it sounded so cliche, especially coming from a pastor, but it was like, man, I have no better explanation than just Jesus. Like, Jesus just radically changed my life. And that's what I want to talk about this morning is what does it mean to have our lives changed and transformed by the power of Jesus? And what does that look like? And how do we go about doing that as those who are trying to follow Jesus with our lives? And if you've been journeying with us this year through Common Prayer, you'll notice that each month kind of has a theme. And this month, the month of October, the theme is formation in the way of Christ. Formation in the way of Christ. And the little excerpt, it says this. It says, for many of us, the judgmental, arrogant, legalistic Christianity we knew growing up has created a suspicion of discipline and order that can lead to a pretty sloppy spirituality. Reacting against the institution's sickness, we easily find ourselves with little to help us heal from our own wounds, create new disciplines, and carve out a space where goodness triumphs. People who are afraid of spiritual discipline will not produce very good disciples. Community is pretty hip these days. The longing for community is in all of us. We long to love and to be loved, but if community doesn't exist for something beyond us, it will atrophy, suffocate, and die. Discipline and disciple share the same roots, and without discipline, we become little more than hippie communities or frat houses. We easily fall short of God's dream to form a new humanity with distinct practices that offer hope and good news to the world. And that's, like I said, that's in the kind of opening pages of the month of October in Common Prayer. And it's really getting at this kind of this disparate disconnection that many of our faith traditions have been void of. And I don't know your story. I don't know if you're brand new to church. Maybe this is your first time here. And if it is, welcome. We're so glad that you're here. Welcome to the dysfunction. Welcome to the family. But I know if you grew up in church, you know, I came to Christ in high school. I'll talk a little bit more about that. I came to Christ as a teenager, so I didn't really grow up with any of this. But what I was exposed to was kind of a kind of white bread, vanilla, American evangelicalism. And there wasn't a lot of talk around spiritual formation or spiritual discipline. In fact, those were kind of like bad words, and we'd trip over the idea of like faith versus works and all that. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a bit. But really, the formation, practice, discipline was never really much of the conversation. And maybe that's true for you. Maybe you grew up and you never even really heard that language, spiritual disciplines or spiritual formation. I really love to use the word practice. My wife is in medicine, and I just love the humility that medical providers carry with them. And they just say, hey, we're just practicing, right? When they say we're practicing medicine, because there's just, that's all the best you can do is practice. And I think that's the reality of when it comes to following Jesus, is the best we can do is we can practice. And these disciplines are part of that. Our history is so diverse and so complex when we look at the breadth and the depth of the church and all of the many different faith expressions. And over the last 2,000 years, what has been developed is just so many different spiritual practices and disciplines that help bring about our change and our transformation, that help bring about the new life that's offered to us in Christ. But if you grew up like me, it's like, man, just say the prayer, do the thing, and boom, I'm better. But I don't know about you, but I did that and I wasn't any better, right? And my life was still the same. It was as messy and complex as it was before I came to know Christ. And I remember going to college and studying the Bible. I was a biblical studies and theology major and miracle. I went to college. We were talking about SAT scores this morning. I was like, man, I just found my high school transcripts and I think they gave me enough points for writing my name on the SAT score. So I know that sounds like I'm very learned, but it was a miracle. I was at college. But it was really there as I was studying the faith tradition of the church in general that I was exposed to this idea around formation for the first time, particularly in this book by Richard Foster that he wrote. It's called The Celebration of Disciplines. And I was like, I don't know if discipline should ever be celebrated. You know what I mean? Because if you think about discipline, we think of it in one of two ways. It's either discipline that comes at us because of mistakes we made. If you grew up with a wooden spoon or a belt, that means discipline, right, to you. Or maybe some of you are freaks of nature and you like do triathlons and stuff and you love discipline. But the rest of us, we're like, I don't want to do that. Like the discipline of doing the same thing over and over again to get the result that you want. And when I read that book, it just kind of like, it was interesting to me. And I learned a lot about the spiritual disciplines, but I barely tipped my toes into it. And then I was assigned another book in college from Dallas Willard called The Spirit of Disciplines. And for whatever reason, that one really resonated with me more. It piqued my curiosity. And I've spent really the rest of my adult life in season and out of season really practicing these things, sometimes very intentionally and with a lot of volition, and other times completely forgetting about them altogether. And so just as we unpack kind of what are the spiritual disciplines, what do we mean when we talk about that? What does it mean to be formed into the way of Jesus? I think Dallas Willard lays out this really beautiful framework for it in his book. And if you can throw those up there, he breaks them down into the disciplines of abstinence and the disciplines of engagement. And I just want you to see them. I mean, feel free if you really want to nerd out on this, like take a picture or email me later. I'll send this to you or just buy the book. But he breaks it down into these disciplines of abstinence. These are things that we can let go of or get space from. And it's just solitude, silence, fasting, frugality, chastity, secrecy, and sacrifice. Now, every single one of these in and of itself is this multi-layered, lifelong journey of kind of digging into these practices. And there's a million different expressions of each one of these spiritual practices. We're not going to teach them or get into them all this morning. I just want to expose you to what historically for the last 2,000 years, people who have been trying to follow Jesus with their life have engaged in as a way of understanding and knowing God in fresh and new ways, and having their lives changed and transformed by these. These are the disciplines of abstinence, things that we can get distance from or let go of or suspend for a season or a moment to get connection with Jesus. And then there's another one, and this is probably, if you're American, the disciplines of engagement. These ones might be more familiar to you because we're like, we get stuff done, we like to do. So I know for me and my spiritual journey, like, I'm more bent towards, let's get these things, let's do these things, let's do it, right? And these are the disciplines of engagement: study, celebration, service, prayer, fellowship, and confession, right? And I know if you think about kind of the tapestry of your involvement, even just seeing other faith expressions, like for confession, if you grew up Catholic, that's probably a practice you were familiar with. If you grew up in kind of like the Protestant world, don't tell anybody anything. Just between you and God, right? And so these are just some expressions of spiritual disciplines. I just wanted you to see those because the rest of the morning we're going to be talking about what does it mean to engage one or more of these as we are formed into the way of Christ. And really, all of these disciplines are meant to... They're really about learning to set aside, intentionally, very practically, set aside dedicated time in your life, oftentimes quite simply putting it on your calendar, making it a priority, setting time aside to intentionally be with God, to be with God, in order to become like Him and partner with Him in this world. That's what the disciplines are for. That's what they do. And in the past few years, you know, this is an emerging conversation here in the life of our church. To be quite honest, for the last, you know, the first, I don't know, decade of our Makers Church, and you know, next year we celebrate 100 years of North Park Baptist Church, and even just knowing, you know, very intimately, kind of Baptist practice, man, a lot of these things were never mentioned or taught or practiced. And so really in the last 3 years, we've really since the time of our merge with North Park Baptist, for whatever reason, like myself and Mark and Shalise and our team have just felt a deep need to be formed in the way of Christ. Like if we just look at our lives, we're like, man, we're doing it. We're like pastoring a church and living life and doing all these things. But like, man, I don't feel deeply rooted in the way of Christ. And so, of course, this spills out onto us, and you get to keep hearing us talk about this stuff. And we've practiced this in some different ways, and maybe as a church, I mean, I would say if you've been with us every Sunday for the last 3 years, you would feel like we've actually talked about it a little bit. And we've dipped our toes into this. We've tried to invite you into some of these practices. Just kind of looking back, like even doing Lent. You know, like, I don't know about you Baptist folks, but like most Baptists didn't grow up practicing Lent. You know, that was very like Catholic or high church. And for us, we're going, man, there's a lot of beauty in these 40 days of separating ourselves from food or from things that are just distracting our lives. And so for the last several years, we've practiced Lent. One of my favorite expressions of that was, I don't know if it was last Lent or the one before, we did the ordinary, the sacred ordinary time where we just, Trish wrote this book that was just like very practical. Because I know it's so easy to be like, oh, that's what like religious people do. They do that kind of stuff. But I'm just a normal person, right? And Trish Harrison, she writes this book called The Liturgy of the Ordinary, and she just adds all of these moments in our day. It's like simply like brushing our teeth or commuting to work or whatever. That can be sacred moments of spiritual discipline. And I think one of the things that I love about our church is that like, I can speak with authority on what it means to practice these things in a normal life, because I have a very normal life. I work a full-time job as a fireman. I have three kids and a wife with very high expectations. I'm just kidding. But I, you know, so I'm not the guy just cloistered in, you know, the holy spaces doing these holy things. This is a challenge for me, as I know it will be and is for many of you. But we've tried to create space in the life of our church to get at some of these things. Many years ago, we started practicing a staff Sabbath day, a day where we just don't bug each other for staff things. We're okay with doing that. We just did a round of sabbaticals. I took a sabbatical this year, earlier in the year. Shalish just came back, and Mark is gone right now. He's literally hiking the Camino right now in Portugal and Spain. And had we never started dipping our toes in these things, the reality of us doing sabbaticals would just, I mean, it was literally an unknown reality until we started really trying to play and mess and practice these things. So we saw the list of the disciplines of engagement, the disciplines of abstinence. And we as a church, we really are feeling this longing that if we are going to actually be formed in the way of Christ, that there's an invitation for us to adopt one or two or more of these practices into the rhythm of our life so that we can be formed in the way of Christ. So I just want to spend the next few moments of the morning kind of talking about the nuts and bolts of that, like, and the why behind it. We see here in Proverbs 1, Proverbs is written by Solomon to his son, to his sons, and he says this. He says, their purpose, and he's talking specifically about the Proverbs, but we know this about the entirety of the scriptures, right? Their purpose is to teach people wisdom and discipline, to help them understand the insights of the wise. Their purpose is to teach people to live disciplined and successful lives, to help them do what is right and just and fair. These proverbs will give insight to the simple, guys like me, knowledge and discernment to the young. And I know that when we hear kind of language around discipline, we could really start to squirm, right? Because like I said, none of us love to be disciplined when it's coming at us. And even when we choose it, man, it's a hard thing. But there's all kinds of expressions in our lives where we see discipline at its best, right? We have some professional athletes in our community that are like competing at the highest level of athleticism. And they're incredibly disciplined, and we celebrate that, right? We have all sorts of things in our society, whether it's an award ceremony or whatever. It's like we celebrate the best of, right? And many of you, you are incredibly disciplined. You're black belts in jiu-jitsu or karate. You are you have PhDs in crazy things that I don't understand. Some of you are striving. I had a conversation this morning with someone in our community who is trying to get, they have a goal, they have a destination where they want to go to law school. And they took a test yesterday or this week, it didn't go as well, they're going to do it again because there's this level of discipline that they have to reach kind of the highest standard of what it means in that arena or that space. And we love it. And many of you are so virtuous in the discipline. Some of you are incredibly just like, man, you eat really well. I don't understand you. But you like stick to your guns on what you do and don't eat. And I think all of us, right, we want to arrive to some level of excellence in our lives, right? We would love to be the Olympic athlete. We would love to be the movie star or the rock star or the CEO or even just like the best mom or dad we could be, right? There's these goals and these aspirations that we have, but man, they take time and effort and incredible hard work. In Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers, he talks about experts being people who have put at least 10,000 hours into something. And so basically he says, it doesn't really even matter how good you are, how great you are, or what accolades you've received, until you've put 10,000 hours into something, you're not an expert. And the same is true. If you put 10,000 hours into something and you don't receive any awards or accolades, you're still an expert. It's such a fascinating idea that in order for us to get to the place that we want to be in terms of achieving excellence in something, man, it just is never handed to us. It's just never handed to us. And the same is true when it comes to our spirituality, to following Jesus. But, you know, the other reality is not only do we kind of lack sometimes the drive or the discipline to get the results that we want to get, but the other reality is most of us, we are like allergic to correction. We are allergic to being called out or to be disciplined, right? You ever been in trouble at work? Man, it sucks. Have you ever gotten like a bad rating on your review? It's hilarious. I work as a fire captain, and one of the things we do every year is we do like employee performance reviews. And they like literally mean nothing. Like they go get filed in an office somewhere downtown and no one ever looks at them. But for whatever reason, my firefighters around the time of EPRs are still like, hey, Cap, I'm going to get outstanding. I'm going to get outstanding. You know, and we just have this drive where we just want to get outstanding, right? Even though that thing does not matter really in the grand scheme of things. And the opposite is true as well. Man, if I ever put unsatisfactory on somebody's review, man, it is a thing. It's a thing. Because nobody wants to be corrected. Nobody wants to be told you can do better. If you have children, you know this is true. From the age of making a facial expression, all three of my kids absolutely hated being corrected. They were allergic to the word no as soon as they could hear it. They would make a face like they were going to punch you in the face, even before they could talk, if you told them no. If you limited them, if you took something away from them, if you disciplined them, it is just the worst feeling in the world. And I wrestle with this all the time. I ask Laurel. Laurel's my accountability partner. And when I do things I don't want to do, like yell at my kids to tell them to stop yelling, because that always works. And Laurel's looking at me like, you buffoon. And I'm like, hey, when I'm doing that, could you like nudge me? Can we have like a code word? Can we have a, like talk me off the edge, you know, when I'm yelling at my kids to not be yelling. And every time she does what I asked her to do, it pisses me off even more, right? I'm like, but you don't understand. She's like, I know she understands, because then I'll be telling her, hey, you're yelling at the kids to not yell. But it's the worst feeling in the world. And listen to what the Proverbs 3, verse 11 says. It says, my son, do not despise the Lord's discipline, and do not resent his rebuke. Because the Lord disciplines those he loves, as a father, the son he delights in. And blessed is the man who finds wisdom, the man who gains understanding. What the scriptures say is be someone who can take correction. Be someone who can hear you're doing it wrong. You can do better. You're not winning right now. Can we be the kind of people who take correction? I think one of the reasons why we don't step into a lot of these spiritual disciplines is we're just not any good at it. And we're reminded right away, I am not good enough. I am not good enough. I didn't ask permission. I'll ask for forgiveness. But Cliff, I'm going to call you out this morning. Because we sat right up here this morning during our all call. And if you guys don't know Cliff, he's an elder at our church. And he's just an amazing man of God. Has led and participated in our prayer team ministry for maybe longer than I've been alive. And if you ask me, who's one of your greatest prayer warriors in the church? Without hesitation, I would say Cliff Reed. And this morning, he confesses, he practices a discipline of confession. And he says, Derek, you invited me to read this book about prayer. And in the book, it challenges us to set aside time to pray. And Cliff, one of the godliest men I know, says, I'm up to 8 minutes. 8 minutes? I'm sorry, Cliff, but I'm not that impressed. 8 minutes? A lifetime of following Jesus? Really? But Cliff, the moment you said that, I'm like, oh my gosh. Me too, buddy. Me too. And I love the humility and the teachability that a guy like Cliff. See, the miracle is Cliff showing up to a prayer practice that he's been participating in his entire life and saying, I got a long way to go. And I'm going to practice some things that might actually help me have a better union with Christ. And I've got some things to learn about what it means to be a praying person. I mean, I'm so deeply moved by that kind of humility. And I think there's some secret sauce in that when we think about just our teachability. This is a nugget that will get you through life. Man, if we can stay teachable, which is synonymous with humble, man, God can do so much work in our lives when it comes to being transformed and changed by him. But it's in the moments of our pride and when we think we have it all figured out, we have it all together, God can't really do much with that. The scriptures say that God gives grace to the humble, that his grace is extended to the humble. And I just think about that in life. I think one of the most endearing characteristics of anybody is someone who stays humble. I remember on the fire department watching captains that had been on the job for 30 years and them still loving training, them loving drilling, them loving to break down an incident that we went to and go, man, what could I have done better? It's an endearing virtue. It's something that moves us to the place of actual transformation, because once we think we know it, we can no longer know anymore. So what does it look like for us to move into a place in our relationship with God where we go, I have so much to learn. There's so much in me that needs to be transformed into the way of Christ. And the moment you think you know it all is the moment that you'll be proven wrong. And so we engage, we are invited to practice these disciplines to help us deal with some of that. But in order to stay teachable, it requires a tremendous amount of discipline. It takes discipline to overpower your ego, to keep an open mind, to see things another way. I mean, I'm not that old, but I know the older you get, man, the harder that is. The harder that is to just be open-minded and see things in new ways. And the scriptures say God blesses, God oppresses the proud, and he gives grace to the humble. And so we're invited. We're invited to be disciplined. And the word discipline, it shares the same root word as disciple. Disciple refers to the process by which one learns a new way of life. It's the same word as apprentice. And it's the way where you find somebody who's a master in something, and you come under their leadership, and you learn their way of doing and being. Right, if you grew up in the 80s, there's no better example of this than the Karate Kid, right? Mr. Miyagi and Daniel-san. I think there's like a new version for young people. I don't know what it's called. What's the new Cobra Kai? That's like an iteration, Evie. When we were kids, it was Karate Kid. You don't know anything about Ralph Macchio, but he was the man. And so we see this seemingly ridiculous thing. Wax on, wax off, wax on, wax off. What are we doing? Why am I doing this? He's painting the fence and waxing the car and doing all these seemingly meaningless things, but they actually transform him. And there's a moment where he actually kind of supersedes the power of his own mentor. And what Jesus invites us to do is to be disciples of him. Now, discipleship is such an interesting word. There's so many strings attached to the word discipleship. And if you've been in church for a long time, man, it's a buzzword. People love the word discipleship, right? And there's a lot of judgment when it comes to like, well, what's your discipleship pathway at, you know, your church? Or what does it mean to be discipled in your context? And how does your church do discipleship? But one of the greatest problems with kind of at least the expression of church that I grew up in is discipleship kind of always only ever meant knowledge. Like, where do you go to get the right information? Where do you go to believe the right things? And I don't know about you, but man, if Jesus came and walked this earth, lived a perfect and sinless life, died, rose again to give us life, man, I think it was for more than us just knowing to believe the right things or have the right kind of knowledge. The word discipleship has been, I think, hollowed out and left empty in terms of information only. What the scriptures call us to, and the reason why this discipleship conversation is such a big deal, is it's like the thing that Jesus called us to do as the church, right? When Jesus died, resurrected, he was about to ascend into heaven, he left us with the Great Commission. We talk about that a lot here at Makers. Matthew 28, therefore go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you. So that's like, that is the charge, that is the invitation that Jesus has given the church, and that's what we've been trying to work out for the last 2,000 years as a family and body of Christ. But I think we can often just leave that with so much left on the table. There's such a shallowness sometimes to the way that we understand what it means to be disciples of Christ. And I could talk for days on the ways we've had misapproaches to that. Oftentimes we feel like we should be discipling people unto us, but no, it's to make disciples of Christ. Right? Our job is to be conduits to get people to Jesus so that Jesus can form us in his ways. The disciplines, they shift us from knowing about God to experiencing God. I'm going to say that again. The disciplines, these hard things, these things we threw up on the screen, these things that we can practice and trip over and fumble with and be messy on our way through them, one or more or all of them, these exist to shift us from knowing about God to experiencing God. And I don't know about you, but I often, and more often than I need an experience of God than I need to know more about him. And the goal of any of these disciplines is union with God. It's not to earn stars and stripes and crowns and jewels on your crown in heaven. It's not about that at all. It's about union with God. And the sad part is there's no fast track to it. There's no fast way to it. It doesn't take days or weeks. It takes years and years. And we're never finished. But it means to become Christ-like. See, the reality is we don't automatically just turn the other cheek. We don't automatically just go the extra mile or give the shirt off of our own back. We don't automatically forgive our enemies and love them dearly. Just by believing God exists. It doesn't happen. We do those things when we've had union with God and intimacy with him. We've understood the power of what that ability comes from. I don't know about you, but I often want to respond the way Christ would respond. I want to respond the way he responds, especially when I'm in crisis. Right? Like you're under the pressure cooker, you're under the gun, everything's coming at you. I want to respond like the way Jesus responds. But that's a really hard thing to do when we don't live like him in our day-to-day lives. fact, it's almost impossible. In the fire department, we train and train and train and train and train and train, and we discipline, right? In the fire department, when we're training guys and gals in the fire academy, it comes with a tremendous amount of discipline. It's discipline to do the things we've asked them to do, and then you get disciplined if you don't do them, right? You screw that step up and you're doing push-ups. You screw that up and you're running the tower. You screw that up and you're not only are you paying, but it's corporal punishment. The entire academy pays, right? And it's not because we're mean. It's because when you're under the gun, when you're under pressure, when you're under the heat of an incident or a fire or a quick decision that needs to be made, we always resort to our training. We always, under pressure, we resort to our training. And what the spiritual disciplines do is they train us up. They train us up in the way of Christ. They get us access to union with Him, and we allow Him to deposit into us a new way of thinking and being. And if we do that in the daily, then in the moments of crisis, we might just respond like He would. You know, when my son asked me, "Dad, how come you're so different?" And trust me, he knows me well. He knows I'm very, very far from perfect. When he says, "Dad, why are you so different?" It's because Jesus has changed my life. Simply, I respond differently than my siblings might because I've had union with God. He's changed the innermost parts of my being. He's not finished with me yet. I have so much room to grow, but I could not respond the way I respond when I get it right. They know when I get it wrong. But they're seeing and sensing a shift, a change, a transformation, a new life that Christ promises. And it's exclusively been because of the power that Christ can do in me, but it takes us showing up. And I just want to end with this battle that some of you might be thinking about. Because some of you who grew up with this, or lack thereof, you're debating theology in your head. You're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Are you talking about works righteousness? Are you talking about, you know, salvation is by faith alone and no, there's no works and all that? True. See, the reality is our acceptance to God comes by His absolute grace and mercy. We do nothing to earn it. Our salvation is free. However, our transformation, our sanctification, it will cost you everything. It will cost you everything. Jesus invites us to lay down our lives, to take up our cross, to follow Him. The scriptures say this in Proverbs 4. It says, "Get wisdom. Get understanding. Do not forget my words or turn away from them. Do not forsake wisdom, for she will protect you. Love her and she will watch over you." The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom. And then it says this. Though it costs all you have, though it costs all you have, get understanding. See, acceptance is free. Salvation is free. But holiness, sanctification, transformation will cost you your life. And I love this quote by Dallas Willard. He says, "Grace is opposed to earning." You can't earn grace, but it's not opposed to effort. Grace is opposed to earning, but it's not opposed to effort. And spiritual formation, it begins with us finding one of these disciplines or more and just start. I'm going to leave these on the screen. You can take a picture, but maybe you've already started one or more of these and you need to habituate it. Right? There's three steps to these disciplines. Start, habituate, and then fine-tune. Start, habituate, and then fine-tune. See what Brother Cliff is doing? He's fine-tuning. He's fine-tuning his prayer life. This man is a prayer warrior. He knows what it means to be at the feet of Jesus and talk with Jesus and walk with Jesus. But even in his wisdom, also called old age, he is fine-tuning a discipline that he has had access to and leveraged for years and years and years. So maybe there's a discipline in here that you're familiar with, and you need to habituate it. You need to make it regular practice in your life. Maybe you've done that already and you need to fine tune it. Or maybe there's one or two or more on the screen that you just need to say, you know what? Man, I don't even know anything about that thing, but I know Google is my friend and I can go find some ways to start. I can just start one of these. And then over time, habituate it, and then time, fine-tune it. And trust me, friends, I am on the journey. I guess I'll close with this. A lot of these are really terrifying to me, specifically solitude, silence, and fasting. Those three, they were so terrifying to me, I had to start them all at once. Because I just can't stomach, like, messing these all up by themselves. I'm just going to do them all at once. And I had my first foray into all three of those at the same time during my sabbatical on a silent retreat with monks in Big Sur. And trust me, it was the most terrifying thing I've ever done in my life. And I just started. Some of these things I've habituated, that's my next step. I haven't fine-tuned any of them. But man, I took the first step. Man, I have had a taste of what it's like to sit silent with God for a long experience of time. And friends, I have news for you. And it is good. I've had a time to step out and just be alone. I suck at being alone. It's my biggest fear. Jesus met me there. And so the invitation for you this morning is, would you start one of these? Would you habituate some that you've already started? Would you fine-tune some that you're well on the way with? And just, would you say, Jesus, make me more like you? Would you pray with me? God, I know that discipline isn't something that we naturally gravitate towards, most of us. But Jesus, you modeled an incredible life of discipline. All of these things we're talking about, Lord, you modeled for us, and you invited us to practice. I'm just so grateful, Jesus, that you had never invited us to perfect them, to just practice. And God, I believe that there might be some people in the room this morning that have never practiced or set foot into any of these things because, well, quite frankly, Jesus, they've never made a choice to follow you in the first place. And so, Jesus, I just pray if you're moving in the heart and mind and spirit of anybody in the room or anybody watching online that knows that that's their right next step, this is just say, Jesus, I give you my life. Lord, I just pray that they would do that right now in their own hearts, in their own words. Jesus, I give you my life. I receive from you the free gift of grace and forgiveness. And today I choose to be your disciple, to follow you. If you could, just with eyes closed and heads bowed, if you prayed that prayer this morning for the first time, would you just raise your hand? If you're online, maybe you can put something in the chat. Maybe you're here this morning and you're going, you know what, like, I believe all the right things about Jesus, or I'm learning all the things I can know about Jesus, but man, there's some things I need to do to become like him. And if you just really felt like God nudged you and God put one of these practices in front of you and you feel like you need to say yes to it, would you just raise your hand this morning? Awesome. God, you know our greatest needs. You know our greatest wants and desires. And you long to give them to us. But God, you want to shape us, transform us, renew us. You know, that comes from walking with you. And so, Lord, these disciplines that we've shown and talked about this morning, God, these are all pathways to have union with you, to walk with you, to hear from you, to learn from you, and to become like you. And so, Jesus, I just pray that you would breathe on every person here who's decided to take the next step. Lord, whether it's to start or habituate or fine-tune. God, I just pray that you'd be with them. Pray that you'd be calling them to yourself. Lord, I pray for anybody that has said yes to you for the first time, God, that this would be the beginning of a new life. And we thank you for that. In your name we pray. Amen. Amen.
You are listening to the Makers Church Podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.